Coming up on today's episode, Tesla's stock goes through the roof. There's some Model Y rumors on the way, and Tim's going to talk about his experience totally losing out to a cloud at the in-flight abort test. Let's get ludicrous. Hey there, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool future stuff that's happening right now that's going to make tomorrow totally ludicrous. I'm Joe Scott with the Answers with Joe YouTube channel. With me is Tim Dodd.
Hey, it's me, Tim Dodd, the Everyday Astronaut, coming to you from the Gulf Coast of Florida. And with us also is Ben Solens.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Solens from Teslanomics. And man, what a day. What a day. To be alive and talk about things. But before we do that, we should give a big shout out to everyone on Patreon that's listening live.
Yeah, we got some people in Discord, more than normal this time.
Yeah. So, hello everyone. If you want to be one of those people, you can check out the links on the Patreons and the things and hang out with us while we do it live.
Because right now those people are better than you.
The flubs that we had leading up to this, like my phone's not working, then my internet connection at this place being horrible, then a printer fiasco at Joe's household. So
my recording right now is at like 17:30. That's how long ago I hit record, and that's how many times we have flubbed trying to get this thing started. So
yeah, nice. We're basically 20 minutes into the show.
Yeah, and only half of that's me. So
oh man.
So how is Florida, Tim?
It was really nice weather-wise last weekend, especially around the launch. It was actually about ideal, like around 70 degrees, which is what, like 20 centigrade, basically. Just very comfortable. And then it got down to really cold. Like, my family was at Universal Studios. That was like our Christmas present for my parents. They gave my sister's family and me passes to two-day passes to Orlando or to Universal Studios. So we went to everything, but it was 45, 50 degrees the whole time. And we were luckily, we had our winter jackets and everything, and we needed them. It was so cold. So that was a little bit of a bummer. But I decided we were supposed to see a Starlink launch tomorrow. So Friday today, if you guys are listening to this, Friday the 24th. But now it got pushed to Monday. And I'm just going to stick around Florida until fully charged live now, since my parents have this condo here. So I'm just going to drive from here to Austin. So I will see you guys in Austin next weekend.
Yeah. Drive right across the Gulf.
Right. I'm going to do a full Gulf tour. Hopefully it's not the same as the Bush administration's Gulf.
Mission accomplished. Tour. Yeah, well, there is that submarine mode or whatever that it has, right?
Right, yeah.
Flip the James Bond car. So maybe you should test that out. Yes. Do a little video. You know, we'll see how it works.
They can do a software update that lets it drive on top of water. It's coming.
I'll just drive it right in. I'm like right at the beach, basically. So I'll just drive on into the water and see how it is.
It's fine. Not a big water's deal. Fine.
Yeah. So fully charged live. Let's talk about that real quick, because we usually only mention it at the very, very end.
True.
So for anyone that's never heard of it before, shame on you for
because
not
you
listening.
Don't listen to our show.
Yeah.
You only stop at an hour and a half.
Right. February 1st and 2nd, Austin, which is in the state of Tejas. And I don't know exactly where it is in Austin, but it's near Austin or something. And we'll be there. I think each one of us have our own sessions, and we're doing a live podcast.
I have my own like Answers with Joe live kind of thing, and then I've got the thing with you guys. And right now, that's all I've got. It looks like I've been bumped from a couple of things, but I won't hold that against you.
And then our live podcast is on Saturday at 15:30. Do the military time for you guys, you know, since I'm always
cool.
So you can join us there. Check that out. Tickets, all that, links, things in the things. And is it going to be Answers with Joe or just Answer with Joe? Because I saw a different.
No, they fixed that.
They fixed that? Yeah. Okay.
I can now do multiple answers.
I was saying that would actually be hilarious if it was like Answer with Joe. It's just like the 45 minutes. You're just one answer.
Yeah.
You just stand
and it's
up
a
and
really
go,
simple question. 42. I've got to like vamp for 45 minutes.
Right.
No, it's hello, it's me, Joe Scott. The answer is 42.
Right.
Yep. And you're out. And then just stare. Then for 40.
Just stare. Just
now we're just going to meditate.
Yeah. So if you want to meet us, you want to hang out, go check it out. Fully Charged Live. We'll be there.
Mm-hmm. No, you know, you said a second ago you didn't know exactly where it was. It's at the Circuit of the Americas, which is kind of southwest. I had to look it up myself. It's southwest of Austin.
Southeast.
Southeast. You're right. Sorry. I got it wrong. Southeast.
Circuit of the Americas. Put that in the TomToms, and it'll take you right there.
Is that still are those still out there?
That's still a exist? We're you know, pulling out the old man card. For those of us that had cars before you had a phone that had GPS and Google Maps on it, you bought a little thing and put it in your car. It was called the TomTom, and you had the British male voice or the Australian female voice. I went with the Australian female voice. It was very pleasant. And they would just guide you to where you wanted to be. TomTom is still a company. I don't think they sell those things anymore, though. I think they make actual software and all kinds of other stuff, like GPS services and things like that. So,
oh, there you go.
There you have it.
Well, should we get first to talking thing about I learned today. Space?
Let's talk about space.
Speaking of GPS, which comes from satellites,
mm-hmm.
which don't from they me? Don't fly there. On their own, you know.
So, of course, speaking of space, we did have a big thing happened last week, and I missed it. This is one of those launches, as I talked about, I just absolutely had to see, because how often do you get to go to a rocket launch knowing you're going to see a rocket blow up? So that was that's exactly what SpaceX was doing for their in-flight abort test. Now, as we've talked about previously, basically they were taking a rocket, a Falcon 9, with their Crew Dragon on top of it. They're taking it up to the point of maximum aerodynamic pressure. And that's right when, because don't forget, you know, rockets going faster and faster and faster in the atmosphere. But since they're going up, the atmosphere is also getting thinner and thinner and thinner. So at some point, those two things converge. And after that point, the atmospheric pressure drops, even though the rocket's speeding up. It's no longer exerting a great amount of pressure onto the vehicle. So there's just that point where those two things cross, where it's going as fast as it'll be going while the atmosphere is still, like, you know, tapering down, but it's speeding up, and there's a point. And anyway, that's the point of maximum aerodynamic pressure. And so in order to test the system, if you abort during that window, that would be the most difficult time to abort and pull the crew module safely from that. So, in other words, if you can pull away from that, you can pull away from anything, really. And that's exactly what they did. And it was a gorgeous morning. It got scrubbed from Saturday to Sunday. And that's exactly what happened. It ended up right at max Q, exactly as planned. They basically triggered the abort. And they had it pre-planned at a certain velocity that they would trigger an abort. Which triggering an abort actually shuts down the engines. The main Falcon 9, the Merlin engines, there's 9 of them, and it shuts those down, simultaneously pressurizes the Super Draco systems, which are the abort motors, fires them up, and detaches from the upper stage, which basically, you know, pulls the crew capsule away from the now shut down and failing booster. And then it coasted up to something like 40 kilometers and pulled its parachutes and splashed down safely. So this is a shot of it here. I'm just kind of going for their Twitter feed, because they released a few more shots like this. That's really cool. This is the moment when you can see the engine shutting down simultaneously to the Dragon engines basically firing up, and that happens in a matter of milliseconds, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really quick thing, and that's a good thing, because that needs to happen. They recovered it. Of course, it looks great, because it didn't even have to worry about coming back in from space. You know, this was just suborbital, so the crew capsule really hardly went through anything damaging. It experienced only a maximum of like 3.3 Gs of acceleration, so not even that much acceleration. It was enough to be able to pull away. And they even were able to recover the trunk. So the trunk actually pulls away with the Dragon capsule at first. That's the part that's below the crew capsule that's unpressurized. And that helps it stay aerodynamically stable. By staying attached to it, it has fins just like a dart and helps the vehicle stay pointed in the right direction. Once it's at its highest point, it will detach from the trunk too, turn around and enter heat shield side down first. And the trunk doesn't, of course, have any parachutes or anything, but it was still ended up landing so softly that they ended up plucking it out of the ocean, and it looked just almost fine. You can see a few dents in it, but
yeah, it's a little...
shockingly, yeah, isn't that amazing? Here, I'll pull it up a little bigger. I could not believe this. I can't believe this doesn't sink.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like the other side got a little bit more torn up than this side.
It might, yeah.
Still, yeah.
Yeah, it probably hit nose first, actually, because that would make sense since the fins are near the back. You know, it'd probably orient itself going nose first.
It looks like one of those barrels they used to have at parks when we were kids that you could go, like, run inside of and try to get it going really fast and get somebody going in a circle. Yeah.
And that's what's actually crazy.
Right.
If you saw a person to scale here, a average or like a tall, you know, fairly tall 6 foot human, which would be what, 1.8 meters tall or whatever, would only stand up halfway in this thing, because this thing's 12 feet tall. Mm. So that's pretty cool.
Get Tony Hawk out there, man. He'll make quick work of that thing.
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. So basically, this test went flawlessly. It was beautiful, and I don't know if you guys saw my coverage of it, but I did not get to see it.
So did you not even see the explosion through the clouds?
I did not get to see the explosion. It was
that. Oh, that sucks, dude.
Here, I will show you guys my replay. this is Scott Manley actually made a clip of it here on Twitter. This is me having spent, for context, remember, I've now driven 24 hours, slept and set up equipment and stayed up late learning how to run this telescope, set up a whole live stream, done all this stuff for like multiple days basically on very little sleep. So I'm just so excited that this thing finally took off. We're tracking it perfectly with the telescope, and here's what happened.
Hide and seek champion 2020.
You're like setting white balance here. You got a gray card. What's happening? Right. What are we looking at?
For those who are just listening, it's just a gray screen. Like you saw a flame, like a little candle for like a second there.
Just ruined. Just ruined. And look at the shot. I don't know if you guys saw the slow-mo shot that we were able to pull off with the telescope.
The takeoff?
Look at, you can't even almost tell it's playing. It's also kind of running jerkily right now for whatever reason, but and I'll have a full video about this, how we did this. We literally had a massive telescope at the press site and we were tracking it, and I cannot believe how well it worked, and I can't wait to try it again. That's actually why I'm going to stay down here, is we still have that telescope. We're probably just going to keep it. Talk to the guys at OPT telescope about, like, guys, let us run this every launch. Like, I mean, look at this footage.
It was
pretty cool.
The engines
and everything.
Yeah.
Oh. Very well done. It's insane. So we were able to, you know, if this was going to the clouds, we would have had the best shot on the Cape.
What does SpaceX use for, because they seem to be able to, now obviously they have better access, right, than anyone else. But
yeah.
But like, do they have the same kind of setup, like a telescope doing that? Or like, because they're able to zoom in super good too.
That's actually what the video that I'm going to do is about, is pretty much like how NASA and SpaceX and all these companies track them. They have these telescopes that are basically tanks that a person sits in a chair, and they have cameras on either side of them that are, you know, thousands of millimeters, and they literally have this joystick and the whole thing moves around. So I'm going to, you know, the premise of the video is like, can we kind of do that on a, you know, mortals scale of economy, you know? And we did. I could not believe how good this footage came out. Like, it's absolutely impressive. Like, it's when you actually see the raw footage too, because this is compressed Twitter stuff. When you see it's you can see individual, you know, sheets of ice and all these little things and condensation pouring off. It's amazing. So, yeah. So
I can get your frustration when you go through that much trouble and you have this amazing piece of equipment and you're able to get this amazing shot and then it's just gone.
Yeah, it was like I just have the worst luck with live streams. So this is the telescope here. I don't even know if I really posted too much really about it, but it's huge. It's really, really big. It weighs about 90 pounds. Yeah, let me see. I also had... So here you can kind of get a sense of scale. I'm standing next to it, and it's as big as me. The, you know, wow. It's a 10-inch diameter. It's huge. So, yeah, it was no joke. But it'll be really fun, and I'm definitely going to try it again.
That's super cool, man. Yeah.
Yeah, and check out my friends, The Cosmic Perspective. They're actually Consider the Cosmos. They helped me run it. That's Mary Liz Bender and Ryan Shalinsky. They were out there, and they helped me and my camera assistant, Michael. We basically set all this stuff up. It was a lot of work, like we were talking about. Here, I guess this is a cool shot. I'll share this with you guys, too. It was fun, but it's a ton of hard work. But this is us setting up in front of the VAB. This is the press site. And it was a gorgeous morning. Luckily, the weather was just perfect, except for the stupid clouds.
The one cloud that just came by. Was this sort of like a flex cloud also on the other major media out there? Be like, oh, yeah, that's cute, that little camera you got. I got a freaking telescope with a joystick.
I don't know if it was like intended to be a flex in that sense, but for me, I just like to always, every time I go out to the Cape, I'm like, what else can I do? Yeah. What else can I do? And it's just me always trying to like one up myself, really.
Jenny always gives me a hard time. Jenny always gives me a hard time because every like Tesla event, I'm always like, ooh, I need a new camera for this one. And she's like, stop buying. Because then what, without exception, every time I have a new piece of equipment I bring to it, and I'm not really comfortable with it yet, and I screw it up. It's just complete fail, you know. And I just piece together something at the end.
But then your mentality is, if I had a different piece of equipment next time,
yes,
that would be the difference.
Right. Well, see, it's because I didn't get that one. It's, you know,
right.
I went with this one. I need to, yeah.
That's my exact mentality, and that's my exact problem too. Like, perfectly. Oh crap! But but yeah. So we did have, you know, a lot of people. I saw a lot of questions of people saying that wasn't a legit test because the booster blew up after the star, you know, the Dragon capsule like pulled away and all, you know, all this stuff. Friendly reminder that boosters, like, okay, if a booster blows up while a rocket's attached to it. Spoiler alert, you're not going to outrun the explosion. Like, the explosion's going to happen, you know? And all you're trying to do is you're trying to get away from it as quickly as possible. Like, you're not going to outrun it. You're just trying to get away. And don't forget the Dragon capsule is pressurized, so it obviously needs to be able to hold against the pressure of, you know, space and all of that stuff. But it also needs to hold and handle the thermal reentry. And reentering from space is a lot hotter than an explosion. A lot hotter.
What about
if you can handle reentering, again, that's, you know, it's not as, probably not a huge pressure differential and for such a short period of time compared to, you know, it's one bar of pressure difference between sea level and space that it already has to handle. It's not that big of a test. Like, when you see that one video of Little Joe carrying the Apollo capsule, and you see Little Joe tearing apart and the Apollo capsule pulling from it, it is able to stay in front of the flame front, you know, and in front of the debris field. And that's, you can measure that out. Like, that's a measurable thing. I'm like, oh, here's how fast things are going. Here's how fast it pulled away. And don't forget, you know, during those periods, if the booster blows up, the deceleration forces from that, you know, that airstream, because that airstream is that maximum pressure, that's going to be pushing everything back. So if you're still accelerating forward, that's that's going to be basically slamming on the brakes behind you, all that debris and all that breakup. So it is a completely valid test. That's how you test that thing. And as a matter of fact, you know, SpaceX again is the only one to do that, and Boeing opted not to do an in-flight abort test, mostly because their whole system would be more expensive to test on a, you know, any kind of rocket. They'd probably have to sacrifice an Atlas V, which is $300 or $400 million or whatever. SpaceX sacrificed a booster that's already flown. This was the fourth flight.
I was gonna ask you that. I saw some title that was something, and you know, shame on me for not reading further, but something about the very first Block 5 got retired, or like was the one that just was blown up the very first Block 5 or something? Was there a relationship there?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. It was the very first Block 5 they ever flew. It first flew on Banga Bandhu. So it started with a bang, because it's pronounced or spelled B-A-N-G. Started with a bang and ended with a bang. Yeah. So yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any questions you guys have about in-flight abort?
So I guess something that I think I saw answered on Twitter, but I'm going to bring it up anyway, is that, okay, so the engines on the Falcon 9 stopped firing for like a millisecond before the capsule flew away. That was not pre-programmed or anything. Like they shut down, like that was something that the Crew Dragon did on its own. It wasn't like programmed to do it after this happened. It was like they shut down the engines and then it, you know, noticed and said, "Whoop, I'm out of here," and flew away. Right?
So that's something I really tried to get clarification on. So we had the pre-flight press conference and the post-flight press conference. The pre-flight people were kind of asking about that. That only made it more confusing for me. So I asked about it again in the post-flight press conference. And even stopped and was like, "So you're saying," and it still is a little bit unclear to me, but what I believe happened, is they programmed in an abort time. And the first thing the abort sequence does is actually shut the engines down. So that's the chain of commands is, you know, if there is a problem, the first part of the sequence, and basically in parallel, is to shut the engines down and fire up the abort system. So I think they were serial, you know, like they were linked. I don't think it was a if this, then that situation where if, which is programmed. You know, the Dragon capsule would sense a loss of thrust and do it, but in this case, it was a simultaneous. It was the literally like the abort button got hit, which then would trigger the engines to shut down and the Dragon capsule to escape.
Okay,
that's so, the best of my knowledge from what I tried getting out of Elon, and I was like, so you're saying it wasn't like I'm trying to figure out, did something was it this happened and therefore it caused the abort system to go, or like, and from what I could understand.
Yeah, like they triggered basically the thing that would naturally trigger an abort, and they didn't, like those two systems didn't know about each other or something.
Right.
You know, where they would try to simulate something went wrong and then it automatically did it.
Right. So for sure, though, the computer did not see it coming. Like the computer didn't know it was going to receive this abort signal. So they basically treated it as if, basically as if it had manually been pulled even. Yeah. So the computer didn't know. So by doing that, they fully validated the entire abort sequence, basically, because, you know, even if they had this way, they could validate that the abort sequence does shut down the engines and everything. So I think it was the most robust way to really be able to really figure it out, is my understanding.
So I know there's not like a big red button on a control panel that somebody pushed to make the rocket explode, but wouldn't that be awesome? Like, what if you could win a prize and like that was the prize? It was like you get to press that button and watch the thing blow up. Like
Tesla referral prize.
Hey, I like that. You get to blow up a Falcon 9.
That's like I was going to say we talked about it before was San Diego. We had the big, our fireworks show. And one year they all went off at the same time. Yeah. And so to prevent that, they removed the button that does that. Like, why that button exists.
Did some guy just like lean on it like, oh, crap.
Yeah, yeah. I got hungry and I pushed the launch button. I wanted some launch.
Right. Why would they have, like, wouldn't you want like the opposite, like turn off all fireworks button, but instead they're like, turn on all fireworks. Like, when would you ever need that?
Right. That's I don't funny. Know. I mean, I love that it exists because I would want to push that, right? You know?
Someone's like, I've been doing this for 32 years and I've never hit this button. This is the day.
Yeah.
This is it.
I'm retiring tomorrow.
Yeah. It is an ironic way to, like, I imagine they're going off boom, 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 and then it's like, oh, there's something wrong. We got to shut this down. Oh, we're pushing through all the way. He's like, you can't just stop it. We must continue.
Or maybe it was like a stop button, but they switched the wires to where it was, like, you know, reverse the polarity. So just
black and red.
Whoops. Oopsie.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, either way, it was a very viral video that was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shook my windows. Yeah. I remember I was in town at the time. Yeah, shook the whole building.
Yeah. Yeah, so in-flight abort looked to be great. The coolest thing is this was the last major milestone for the Commercial Crew program on the SpaceX side of things. So they said in the press conference, two things. Number one, they actually also did a mini press conference afterwards with Bob and Doug, the two, Bob Hurley and Doug Behnken. Is that their names? Yeah, Behnken. On the that'll be the first crew to fly on Dragon. And they came in about an hour later and kind of answered a few more questions for 15 minutes. And one of them is, like, you know, what is your abort situation like? You know, how can you actually do that as astronauts? What are your options? And it is actually, there's a red handle that you turn and pull, and that will trigger that abort system immediately too. If there's something, you know, say a loss of pressure or something that they could sense internally or something going wrong, you know, you get the pee or something, you know, just pull that handle.
It's like a mechanical switch, though. Not well. I'm sure there's still computers involved, but it's not like, oh, hey, the screen froze and I need to abort now.
Right. Yeah.
That's what happened.
Probably directly.
I don't know if you guys saw this. This is the most bizarre Tesla bug, but in my Model X MCU1, if you search for "This Is America," which is a song by Childish Gambino, it crashes the computer. I posted the video on Twitter. I was like, what? This is the most bizarre, what? You know? What? Yeah.
Is that a statement of some kind?
Well, that's what I was wondering. I'm like, but yeah, you know, that whole thing, like, that was something, Tim, I'm curious your thoughts on. I mean, so the Dragon capsule, the astronauts are there. It's basically just some giant screens that they have, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a lot more going on, but are we worried at all just about the reliability of software and screens in a general sense? I'm sure that they're doing everything possible to make sure no issues there, but it's software. Software is made by humans. We are fallible. Like there's always going to be, there's never going to be something that exists such as software without bugs. Like every piece of software ever will always have bugs. So like, what's the thought process going there instead of having a million physical buttons like, you know, Soyuz or something like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that was another thing that we were kind of asking the astronauts about is like, what can you actually do? If there's any kind of problem, what can you do? And their answer was really interesting. Basically, they're saying because the Dragon capsule's really only having one job, it's going to the International Space Station. It's not some crazy complicated mission with all these, like, you know, we're going to go here, we're going to rendezvous with this, then we're going to refuel, then we're going to do this, we're going to hit the, you know, try to get to the asteroid, do these things, land, you know, like the Apollo missions had, like, you know, hundreds of sequences of events, right? Where the astronauts actually had a lot more interface, where it's like, you know, is it life critical or mission critical, basically? And can we outweigh and, you know, maybe rearrange some things to make sure that, you know, it's life critical? And these missions to the International Space Station, because it's just doing one thing, really, and you're right there in low Earth orbit, your only real option is, if it's not going right, you abort, you know? Mm. And from that point on, the only thing that it needs to do is abort. It needs to re-enter. And so basically if the vehicle messes up on orbit, like getting it to orbit, if the rocket fails, their abort thing basically just gets them on the ground. So that's the only interface they have. Once they're in orbit, they can manually fly it using the touch screens. But at that point, you're pretty much, you know, there's nothing crazy that's going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, you're just going to the International Space Station. You're doing some orbit raises and a few maneuvers, and that's it. You know,
and it seems like that could be pre-programmed or controlled from the ground even.
It's 100% pre-programmed. In the ideal situation, the astronauts won't have to do anything. Mm. You know, just like the Dragon capsule now, which goes to the International Space Station, it's coming up on its 20th mission, has never once had human interference other than, or, you know, other than like resetting the computers once and on the, like the very first mission. Mm. But there's no like manual flying for that at all.
So you're saying you train super hard to become an astronaut to do nothing. That's
well, this is, and that's, and that's kind of the, a little bit of the touchy subject is that, you know, we're employing some of the best test pilots and pilots in the world to be passengers.
Right, right.
But really the era of the, of these modern day astronauts, they're very much less often pilots and they're much more often scientists and researchers. Right. You know, they're going up for long duration stays on the International Space Station, doing science and that type of exploration. And they aren't necessarily hardcore pilots. They don't need to be.
Right. Versus like the days of Neil Armstrong and John Glenn and those guys, you were like a fighter pilot first.
Right.
Right. And then, you know, because that was the mindset. Yeah.
Yep.
The Space Force.
And it was experimental.
The steely-eyed missile craft, man.
So
there it is.
Exactly.
So this is the last step to actually... What is it, demo two, where Bob and Doug are, I call them by their first name, like we're buds or something. But so I've heard rumors on timelines for that. Do you know like when that's going to be?
So basically, since these are this was the final big milestone, we're hopefully, you know, they're shipping the Dragon capsule to the Cape as we in February-ish, not as we speak, but around February it should arrive. If everything gets certified and checks out okay, they'll likely, I think they still have a few more parachute tests to do, believe it or not. Mm. The parachutes are going well. NASA seemed to be very pleased, but they just have to finish that certification. And then hopefully Q2-ish, like, you know, Q2 would be the earliest that we'd see DM2. So I'm guessing
and that
the Tim
would be...
Dodd guessometer is... The Tim Dodd guessometer is, I'm saying May.
For actual astronauts taking off.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Huh.
And
it's cool, but it's also a lot longer than I would have liked, if I'm being honest, you know?
You mean in the grand scheme of things or since right now?
Everything. Well, like, I thought it'd be May last year, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But here we are. So.
But that's why it's that much better. That's finally going to happen.
That's true. That's true.
That's me being trying.
Good things are worth waiting for.
So that one is not going to go to the ISS. It's just going to orbit a few times, right?
No, it will go to the ISS.
Oh, okay.
And the current question is whether or not it's for only 2 weeks and Doug and Bob just kind of hang out and like try to stay out of the way of the other crew on board, or if they make it into a full like extended 3-month mission basically.
Wow, okay.
So, yeah.
So they go up there and they're like, you got a place for me to sleep, man? You got a futon I can crash on or something?
Seriously, there is kind of some of that. It's nuts. It's going to be a crazy time to schedule right now for the ISS because it's so hard to predict when all this stuff is going to be ready. And as soon as it is, they got to make some plans and logistics nightmare. Seriously. Hmm. Speaking of nightmares.
Ouch.
Huh? Boeing Starliner did have a few more problems coming up. Now, this is a little bit of this. I don't know what the good sources on this are, but I do trust Eric Berger from Ars Technica. And some of this stuff makes sense. So it sounds like NASA wasn't quite pleased with the Starliner's performance for that for the OFT mission that was in December. Remember, we already know about the clock anomaly that made it not able to get into orbit, but apparently because of that, it stressed its thrusters so much that NASA is really might not be pleased. I'm going to say might and maybe because we'll probably likely see all of this in the report because NASA is filing, you know, a multi-month investigation of the issue, and they will be filing a report on it. So I'll wait to kind of see all that. But it would make sense. The thrusters were firing for quite a while. They got quite saturated. They got quite hot. Apparently, one of the thrusters didn't even fire, and 8 of them were underperforming.
Awesome.
So what Boeing ended up doing is...
I think we're just going to have to call it on these.
Shoot.
There you are.
Hey.
Okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to stop my video. Is that okay?
Yep.
That should help things quite a bit.
We're looking at the screen right now.
Should take less bandwidth. Yeah, and you guys are running the screen locally, so hopefully that's a little easier on my crappy internet. Okay, I'll just keep going here. So, you ready?
Mm-hmm. Go.
Okay. So one of the things that Boeing did, because they were in orbit, they practiced kind of like if they were going to be going towards the International Space Station, preparing to dock, and if they had to abort from that, they fire up some thrusters and pull away. They performed that maneuver, and apparently that underperformed and may not be within like certificationable range, which would really be a shame. So... So we'll have to wait to hear more about this, but I just thought, you know, Eric Berger, again, I do trust him as a source from Ars Technica. And if there's really problems, kind of basic problems with the thrusters and the manifold that feeds all of the different thrusters and all that stuff, this could really be a pretty substantial delay and another just absolute, like, you know, nail in the coffin for Boeing of like, guys, really, this had to happen now. Amidst all of the things that Boeing's already going through.
Yeah, they're having a no good,
really,
very bad year.
Really be, yes, yes. So I really hope that this gets resolved and figured out pretty quickly. But yeah, that's...
Yeah,
could be a major bummer. But I want to talk about one more thing that just cropped up recently. This was apparently some reports were that the Firefly in Texas basically like blew up. And what it really was, when you start reading about it, it was just a pretty normal test. And the local residents were not ready for for a test of this magnitude. So Firefly Aerospace is kind of, they're sort of similar to Rocket Lab as far as scale. They're a pretty small sat launcher. Go ahead and pull up the Firefly Alpha there, Ben. And... So it's bigger than, it's kind of like in between, it's almost like a Falcon 1 sized vehicle, but with 1,000 kilograms payload to LEO. So about four times more than what Rocket Lab's Electron is capable of. But they were, one of my favorite things is they were going to utilize an aerospike, and then all of a sudden they decided aerospikes are too hard, and they went with these other engines now, known as the Reaver engine. So they too have backed out of their aerospike dreams, but they basically were doing a test the other night, and I guess it went fine, but everyone reported an explosion because that's basically what a rocket engine is. But they may have had some kind of small fire on the pad that got extinguished locally, but regardless, so many people in the local community called the fire department reporting an explosion that the fire department went down anyway, and kind of, it was this whole thing, but apparently everything's fine, and that was just kind of them testing scale like that for the first time, and it spooked out all the locals. At least that's my understanding. I didn't really have a lot of time to find out what exactly went on in this one, but kind of cool that if as long as everything did go fine, that's a good sign for Firefly, because I'm ready to see those guys put something into orbit. That'd be awesome.
I like how there's a user guide on their website. Like, okay, guys, here's where you put the payload in. Okay, and if you need to take the payload out, like, you just got to push this button. This is kind of funny.
First, try turning it off and turning it back on.
Yeah, step one.
If your thing's not in space and it's supposed to be,
yeah,
try this.
Step one, are you in space? Step two, do not open the door.
But that's normal, actually, for all rocket companies to develop a payload user's guide so that people know their dimensions, how many G's their payload's going to experience, and at what point, you know, the axes of forces, the resonance, the actual vibrations, all of these things actually have to be taken into account, and it's just kind of, it is pretty cool, actually.
It's kind of like a developer's kit.
SDK. Yeah. It's funny, it kind of just reminds me of like, hey, check out my new online course, download the free PDF right here. The website's like trying to advertise you something, you know.
Seriously.
Texas represent.
But yeah, that's pretty
all
much
I gotta say.
That's pretty much it for me for space news. And for those of you watching, sorry that you're just seeing half, maybe some or all of my words that say everyday astronaut, but the bandwidth here is so bad. on all the different devices we've tried that I'm just going to be some words. But audio's still here. Yay.
And if you didn't know, we do post this on YouTube. And you can watch along and see all the things we're talking about. I saw some comments recently that were like, wait a minute, I didn't know you posted this on YouTube. So I thought that was worth mentioning.
And vice versa. If you're on YouTube and you're the type of person that likes to listen to podcasts while you drive and stuff like that, we also cater to you.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is like I don't know how people find it on the podcast. I mean, I'm glad they do. And we've had some lovely reviews on there, and I appreciate that. But I'm always kind of like, how do people even know we're there? Like, to me, I'm just in the YouTube world all the time, so I just assume that that's where everybody finds us.
Yeah, and we also have, on the website now, every time we post a new episode, it creates a new webpage. So if you were to search for it in Google, it may, you know, show up with all the notes and everything, as well as we have our email list there. So that's actually going kind of well, where if you... Because, you know, with YouTube, the deal is you have the algorithm, and whether or not it chooses to share your video with someone, regardless of whatever they choose to do, is up in the air. So the surefire way is either on your podcast player or on the email list, because we'll just send you an email with every episode that comes out. So if you guys are wondering how to stay connected, we got you covered. We got options. Mm-hmm. We got options.
So those who are driving right now, hello, and keep your eyes on the road.
Yes. And we are not inside of your car. We are playing. That was a Ron Swanson. Ron Swanson bedtime stories. Shout out to them for that. He's like, do not be alarmed. I am not in your car right now.
In that Nick Offerman voice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So speaking of going to space... the Tesla stock is about to reach there. In fact, I don't know what the exact stock price on 100 kilometers or whatever is, but currently, as we watch it live here, can we just sit and watch this for like 30 minutes? Call it. The stock currently for Tesla is $571.24. Anyone remember what it IPO'd at in 2010?
I don't.
Oh, no.
$17.
Wow.
So you are up 33.5 times of whatever your investment was then is what you have now. So I'm glad everyone took my advice to not buy it a few months ago when I posted that video. So, you know, you're welcome for that. The question is, what's going on, and why is it hitting this?
Why now?
And if you go back, so I'll describe what are shown on the screen here. But I like this MarketWatch website. It has a really good kind of layout, and you kind of this advanced charting mode. You can see the history of things and kind of play with the data a little bit. So if you go back a year, you can see, you know, it in January 24th, 2019. It was right around $291 a share, which actually wasn't bad. If you remember, there was in 2018, it was a lot of ups and downs, 2019 as well. But it has just been on an absolute tear since about October, late October, which is when we got delivery numbers for Q3. And I think they had that surprise profit. In Q3, you saw it jump, in 2 days by 100 points or so. And it's, you know, I mean, it's like doubled since then. Or more than doubled, technically. So pretty cool, pretty good stuff. I think what the general consensus seems to be of all the stuff I've read about and tried to follow along here is that Tesla's finally done it. They've actually kind of broken through the FUD and the nonsense and all that. In fact, there's some recent news that came out about sudden unintended acceleration, where the car would just, if you guys remember the Toyota Prius fiasco way back in the day, which if you're looking for the answer, it's cosmic rays, and I'm fascinated with this, but there was a lawsuit, or the NHTSA or NHTSA, which is the most horrible way of saying that, are going to investigate Tesla for this. And unlike automakers back in the 90s when it was happening to Priuses, Tesla actually has very detailed data about every single car ever. So chances are it'll be dismissed. And Tesla put out a statement saying, guess what? That lawsuit was brought on by a short seller. So there's no evidence of this, according to them, yada, yada. But point being, like, the people that were spreading misinformation and trying to cast doubt and all that, not the reasonable people that were like, you know, back when Model 3 was just barely getting rolling, going, I don't know, you know. they're not like an automaker with 100 years of history behind them, so we'll see. Like, you know, I think there was a lot of legitimate kind of uncertainty, but it seems that they've passed that. The Model 3 is just crushing, you know, in terms of deliveries. They are continuing to crush, as well as now the China factory is up and running. There's even been people trying to cast doubt on that. And so someone posted a video showing the stamping machine creating thousands of cars at the China factory already. So I mean, my guess is that, and basically what drives the stock price is a lot of speculation by big time investors. So here's the deal, right? If somebody that has, I don't know, $1 billion to play within the market, and they're saying, we think Tesla's going to go to $1,000 in terms of the share price. Well, guess what? All the other people that don't have $1 billion are like, oh man, I better buy some stock now. And so it creates this swell. And so this is why, again, the whole thing to me is kind of a rigged speculative system. It's not really based on reality or fact. But that's basically seeming what's going on is everyone seems to be positive on it, really driving this up. And it's backed by the deliveries. And we're going to have an earnings call here next week. A lot of people are expecting another profit. If so, I think that would make the fifth time they've shown profitability in the past like 8 quarters or something like that. So doing extremely well. But yeah, I mean, just basically all the stuff is happening and it's all going the right direction currently. And so, yeah, I think that's what's really driving this up here. And it's reaching just record levels here.
You know, I didn't, when you said the China factory, that for some reason flipped a switch in my head. It's like, oh, maybe to the investor types, it's not real unless you've got a factory in China, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing for me is, you know, we're just seeing like record after record of deliveries and the demand is still very consistent. And I think people just didn't realize the effect that Elon talks about all the time, which is, these will sell great once they're in customers' hands and more people get to experience the Tesla. Because then it'll make people... That's something that's not very tangible. But all of us as Tesla owners have experienced that where you get someone in the car and they're like, no way. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're, I can't believe... It does that? You know, there's so many things. And so many of those things are untangible. And it's not until it starts taking effect. And the more that are on the road, the more people experience them. And the more the demand goes up, just kind of naturally, you know, and it's amazing.
You know what I've been thinking? I would love it. I mean, it doesn't affect me because I've already got one. But if they had some kind of program where people could drive one for about a month, because getting behind the wheel once and doing a test drive, maybe even having it for a day, that's nice. It gives you a taste and you're like, okay, That's cool. Ooh, it does have this acceleration. It's got all the whiz bang features, blah, 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 sure. But once you really get used to driving it and then you go back to a gas car, it's just like, oh my God, this is a piece of crap. This is so bad. Like you don't realize it until you've gotten away from it for a little while and then you get back in and it's just like, oh. Like every time I drive a gas car now, that's exactly how I feel. I'm like, I never want to drive one of these again.
You're right, because I think people have all these misconceptions about how inconvenient it is still. And that I had this Twitter conversation with someone, and it you know, it was actually really friendly there for a fan of mine, but
conversation in quotes.
No, but I had that video of me charging up at the V3 in Nashville, and I was getting like 900 miles of range per hour, just cooking on V3, and it was amazing, and I was super stoked. But unfortunately, because I didn't have a destination, it's still in the top left part of my screen said 55 minutes till full. Because you know it's gonna sit there and trickle forever for the the last 5% of charge would take a half hour or whatever almost, you know.
Yeah.
So someone goes, I'm supposed to be impressed that it's gonna take 55 minutes to fill up your car, and I'm like, well, I mean, realistically it'll do, you know, 100 miles in about 5 minutes. He goes, so that's still 3 times slower than my car.
Well, yeah.
He goes, how is that any more convenient? I go, well, I mean, honestly, how often are you driving more than 300 miles a day? And he kept skirting the question over and over. We were talking. I go, no, tell me, more than 50% of your time driving, are you driving more than 300 miles in a day? And he's like, you know, eventually got around and he goes, well, I mean, honestly, this is like literally after 10 things. He goes, honestly, I live in New Zealand, and if I drive 300 miles in any direction, I'm in the ocean. I'm like, dude, like,
get bent.
That's exactly what I'm talking about is that you would literally be like better off and it'd be more convenient for you in your daily usage than any other vehicle, period.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said about that. In fact, I don't know if I've told the story on here before, but I met a guy at a charger once, not a Tesla charger, and he was in a Chevy Spark, and he said, you know, you convinced me to buy this car. And I kind of chuckled, like, how? If I've said anything about the Chevy Spark, it probably wasn't positive. but the deal was is that when you looked at the numbers behind it, which I guess this, you know, made me feel good that he actually did the math on it.
He freed the data.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it was his daughter is going to college, and it's like 40 miles away. He's retired or works from home or something where he doesn't really need to drive anyways. And so he got this Chevy Spark, which you guys don't know is kind of like, I guess you could say, the predecessor to the Bolt. It's a smaller, like, smart car size vehicle. Mm-hmm. And I think the range is 80 or 90 miles on it, which is pretty impressive, actually, for that small of a vehicle. But it was just enough for him to get there and back and to do his little stuff around town. And he doesn't go on road trips or travel that much or anything. And it was $9,000 used with like 10,000 miles on it.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'm like, hallelujah. You know, right. I think that if more people were smarter about that, freakazoids like me that want a 500 mile range EV are just stupid. Okay. People don't need that. I do argue that super fast charging people need everywhere, but you really don't need a 500 mile tank of electrons. You know, you don't. But people seem to think they do. I think that reasonably, if you're coming out with a new EV, you should be looking at 300 miles or greater. You're going super, super cheap. So if you say 150 miles, I want that thing about 10 grand brand new. Maybe 12 or 13 with some options. You know, I think those are your price points. It's a city car. Cool. It's super cheap and economical. That's why I get it. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting it to go 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. I'm not getting it to go long distance travel. I'm getting it to be super functional, save me money, save the planet, all those things. Super in favor of that. Most automakers are doing neither of those things. They're creating really low range, really expensive cars that are just stupid. Or they're, you know, trying to create these long range ones and it's just then they're failing at it, basically. But yeah, I mean, it's a good point, you know.
So Jason over at Engineering Explained had a video this morning I was watching when I got up, and he did something that I thought was pretty interesting. I'd never seen anybody really cover it like this before, you know, kind of put this thought experiment out there. But it was basically like, imagine if way back in the day, electric cars had won out over combustion engines, and just today, or just, you know, in this year or whatever, combustion engines finally hit the market. And it was like, everybody was going, oh, there's this great new, you know, combustion engine car. Let's go check this out. And then you go get behind the wheel and there's no torque. And it, you know, you press the accelerator and it takes a second. It's like, what's this about? And it was basically talking about, like, if you were used to driving an electric car and then you had, you know, to use a gas car, would it be a step up or would it be a step down? Most of us, I think, would think it was a step down. And I thought that was an interesting 100%. Way of, you know, kind of framing the whole thing. But yeah, the whole, like, you know, Tim, what you were just talking about, the guy talking about, I'd have to stop and charge for 30 minutes or whatever. It is a very small segment of the population that are driving more than 300 miles a day on a regular basis, you know?
Yeah.
And really, the biggest thing for me since I got this car is, wow, I don't have to, like, if I'm on my way to a job or a work or going to see a friend or whatever, and it's like, oh, I have to stop and pump gas. I don't have to do that ever. You know, like it's so much more convenient, and it's just the complete opposite on a daily basis of what people seem to think or what the FUD is out there around it.
Yeah. 90% of the time you're not charging at a supercharger or anything like that. You're charging at home. Yeah.
Unless you live in an apartment or something and you don't have access to charging at your apartment, then
that is true. And in fact, this is where, so I just want to go out and say that I was wrong about this before, where I was saying, why do we need ChargePoint, or someone had a thing that they're saying, we're going to install 2.5 million level 2 chargers. And my whole thing was like, why the hell do we need that? We need long distance chargers, super fast ones. We don't need just like run of the mill ones, because you're going to be more expensive than my own house. Why would I ever use that? It doesn't make any sense. I was wrong, and here's why, is because cities now, in fact, San Diego is one of them, where we're actually subsidizing or giving like tax breaks to new apartment buildings and new apartment complexes and things to install these chargers. Mm-hmm. And so, in fact, where I park my car, there are 6 ChargePoint chargers, but if you go on the map and look at ChargePoint, they don't show up. And the reason is because to use them, you have to be a resident, you have to have a key fob, et cetera, et cetera, and they're free. So cool. It's free EV charging from, now ChargePoint just happens to be the, you know, the basically the vendor of the thing. The building owners are paying for it, and they're getting tax breaks from the city, which is saying, hey, you have to do it. So I think that that's going to change to where even people in, like, this is a newer building, and I think in like the 2 levels of parking garage that I've been on, you know, I don't like go wandering the whole parking garage. There are 6 total chargers that are all totally free level 2. 2 of them are actual Tesla destination chargers, which again don't show up on the Tesla destination charger map because they're only for residents. So cool. I think it's going to become, I mean, those things change slowly over time, but when, you know, cities and counties and states or whatever put money forth to do that, you know, surprise, surprise, behavior changes. So I think we're going to see that even for apartment dwellers, the percentage of time you need an external charger away from you is going to start to drop as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, there's always the concern about chicken and egg syndrome with EV adoption. You know, there is who's going to buy an electric car when there's no infrastructure, and who's going to build the infrastructure when there's no cars. There's finally, like, a huge amount of electric cars on the road. You know, I mean, we're not getting to the point where it's, you know, 50% of the cars on the road, but we're finally seeing where there's actually demand, where people are walking into hotels going, hey, why don't you guys have a charging station for me? Why, you know, starting to actually go to their town halls and be like, hey, you know, I drive an electric car now and it'd be really convenient. You know, there's a lot of people. And so now I think it'll just keep going and going and going to the point where we're going to laugh at this era of, like, do you remember back in the day you had to kind of plan and you had to think about charging and it was a thing, and like people were all worried about it, and it's just like, that's not going to, I think it'll only take like 3 or 4 years before it catches up because the adoption rate's so high.
Well, to that point as well, in that time span, I'm pretty sure we're going to see some battery breakthroughs in this space that are going to make it like you there may be a day when range anxiety is something you associate with gas cars. Mm-hmm. The only exception is, you can refill in 5 minutes or whatever, right? But I could see if the battery technology continues to grow and you know, innovate at that pace, where we could easily have 1,000-mile range EV in 10 years from now or something like that, where no gas car even, I mean, you know, let's say like a 50-gallon tank or something, doesn't have a shot at that, right? Yeah. So I think... you know, I think it's an interesting time. And in batteries, I was thinking about this the other day. I think, Joe, one of your videos talked about it. Like, you know, you probably have a video on this, Joe. It's like the major inventions that have influenced, you know, mankind. Well, you have like fire, right? I guess it's not an invention, but like, you know, how to harness it. They have like the wheel, right? That's probably a big one. Maybe the printing press down the road, maybe the steam engine. So, you know, there's a few things that have happened here. The lithium-ion battery is definitely one of these things that literally powers, like, if you just look around everywhere you go, so much of what our world is today is based on that one technology. And imagine, you know, as that evolves, like, we're going to hit that again. Batteries are going to be, or already are, but are like, going to be just some of the most useful things we've ever created as humans, I think.
Mm-hmm. You seen The Graduate? The movie The Graduate?
Dustin Hoffman?
Dustin Hoffman, back in the day, like in the late 60s.
Sleeping with the mom? Yeah.
Well, he graduates. That's why it's called The Graduate. But he graduates college, and he's having some party to celebrate. And this older guy keeps coming up, and he's like, one word, plastics.
Oh, right.
Plastics. Yeah. Today it would be batteries, I think. Or right. energy storage, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Plastics are another one, too, that probably falls in that category. Now it's a huge problem, but at the time, that reduced waste, right? Mm-hmm. Because it was a byproduct of refining crude oil, if I remember correctly. Yeah. It was like part of the things. And who was it, Rockefeller or somebody? Somebody that was like the big oil guy at the time was like, well, why can't we figure out something to do with that stuff? And it was all the waste from the stuff that they had used from the crude oil to process to gasoline or whatever. And it turned out to be, well, let's make this thing out of it. And it turned into, you know, it's obviously a negative
everything.
Now, but at the time, things got cheap. I mean, you know, everything has like a positive and negative, I think. So,
yeah.
Especially batteries.
Yeah.
Oh, I just got it. Anodes and cathodes.
Yeah.
So, sorry. I want to kind of wrap this up and move it into the, because we were talking about the stock and the speculation of it being, you know, just skyrocketing. Do you think right now the stock is inflated because there's rumors about Model Y? Is that, because I've been hearing a lot about that. What are your thoughts on that? Because that sounds pretty exciting, and I can see why that would bump the stock price.
Yeah. So there have been some rumors of the Model Y being delivered next month. Apparently, one person that posted on Reddit got a phone call and said the performance model will be available next month for delivery. And then all-wheel drive after that. That probably affected the stock price. And I think it's complete fake news. I think the chance of Model Y actually getting delivered before, I think May is a good target for seeing actual deliveries besides like 10 that were handmade to employees, which all the ones you see now are all handmade. They're not coming off of a line. Mm. But I think that the Model Y is going to surprise in a lot of ways with other technology that's different than Model 3. I know in the exterior and the interior, like it looks the same, but I think the Model Y is going to be a dramatically improved tech that actually powers it. So we'll see what happens there. But
wait, like, do you have any it sounds like you're knowing something. You're holding off. Do you have any speculation on that?
I know there's that wire situation. The I don't know what you call it, but they're cutting down on the amount
wiring
of wire.
The flex circuit should cut down on the wiring, makes it easier to produce. And it's like an order of magnitude. It's like 100 meters versus a kilometer difference.
Right.
And then, you know, Elon on the Third Row podcast, I think it's called, talked about Maxwell batteries having a big impact. And that's good news. I think we've all speculated about that. But it seems like Model Y would be the right, you know, time. If they could get that going, I just think that we're going to see a lot of stuff here. That the Model Y is going to be sort of a sleeper, I think, and probably blow the doors off of a lot of other things. You know, like it's gonna be if my the rumor mill here and in my prediction, it's going to be a thing where you're like, oh, it just was a boring unveiling. It basically is a copy of the Model 3 with a couple. You know, different functional tweaks, but you're going to look at the specs and go, "Oh my God, what is this? It's like something we've never seen." So
you think so?
I think it could be. I think it's a sleeper. I think people are
but which specs?
I think you're going to see. Well, if the Maxwell stuff that Elon teased about on that thing come true, you could see a lot more range than currently out there, or cheaper or lighter. You know, there's so many things that could happen. So. So the rumors are coming out there.
That would be amazing.
What's that?
Or all three, and that would be amazing.
Yeah. So there's rumors about deliveries. I think that's fake news. I just don't think it's going to happen. This was something that did come out. I don't know if you guys saw the pictures of the Third Row in the Model Y.
Mm-mm.
I did see this.
Yeah, and you can tell from his tone of voice. Did you order the Third Row, the 7-seater, Tim?
I did, but I changed it because
good.
I don't know why I did that in the first place. But
okay, so according to Tesla, the from Tesla, it's saying room for up to 7 adults with optional third row. Model Y provides maximum versatility, able to carry 7 passengers and their cargo. Each second row seat folds flat and independently, creating a flexible storage for skis, yada, 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 yada. Here's a photo for you to digest and see what the third row of the seat of the Model Y looks like.
For those of you just listening, if you, so I have a good friend that is a quad amputee. He would fit great back here.
Right. There you go.
I was thinking if you slim down your calves a bit, maybe.
And then have no feet or anything. Because it just is straight. Like, it's totally flat. Like, it looks like it goes, like, 3 inches forward and 3 inches down from the end of the seat to the floor and the seat in front of it. You could maybe put a broom handle in there, basically.
Now,
so are those on rails, though? Like, could the middle seats scoot up some? Give a little extra room?
I'm sure. Yeah, it must be. Now, if you're in Kentucky and you're working and there's a jockey convention, this would be an excellent mode of transportation, I think. But that's about the size of the person that's going to fit back here. I mean, I wouldn't even, I don't know. It's just such a, it's a joke, basically. Like, this to me is stupid. This is a bad design.
Well, what about two car seats?
No.
You're a dad.
Absolutely not. I mean, maybe a booster seat. Yeah, when your kid's older.
A little bumpy things?
Yeah, so the booster seat just basically elevates them so the shoulder strap on the seatbelt comes across their chest. Mm. You know, other than, yeah, but like an actual car seat? No. I don't even think, I have a buddy that has, that puts them in the back, the third row of the Model X. And even that, I mean, because we thought, oh, that'd be kind of cool. And I look back there, I'm like, no way, man. Absolutely not. So, I mean, I'm sure it would fit, but holy cow. That'd be like, you know, punishment. Like, hey, you were bad. I'm going to put you in the third row.
No, not the third row, Dad.
Exactly. And we are going on a road trip, you know. So,
yeah.
We'll see.
Tell that to your therapist someday.
I will have to say, so remember, I do actually have a reservation for why. And a trip like this makes me really wish that if the Y could keep up with the range and, you know, if it had a little bit faster range, a little bit faster charge rate or something, you know, than the 3 to kind of counter its inefficiency, because it is less efficient than a 3 since it's bigger surface area, a little heavier. I would love to have a Y as far as the storage and more space for what I do, especially. My car is packed to the brim. But I just, for this road trip, you know, if I had to add an extra, you know, 30 minutes because of increased charge times and all that stuff and inefficiencies and everything, I don't know if it wouldn't be ideal. But if they make up for it with a new battery technology or some kind of extra tweaks or something, then that does excite me. And that probably would have me replacing my car with a Y.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it might actually be lighter than your 3, if you think about it. If they're able to pull off that dry electro thing that, you know, all the rumors and stuff out there talked about, it would essentially, like, give you the same energy density, but for, I forget what it is, like 40 or 50% less weight. So, yeah, I mean, but I don't know if that matters, because the range would still be the range, right? That would be the huge win is if they're able to say, hey, I know we said top range 300, it's actually 400. That would be like, woo, you know, that would blow the doors off of things. So I don't know. I think we'll see. But really, it goes back to that whole conversation earlier about how much range do you need? Because really, if they're able to do that, if the Maxwell Tech, they're able to integrate it, and the goal, I would have to imagine, isn't necessarily longer range. It would be cheaper, would be the goal. Because imagine if you could make the Model 3 25 grand brand new. That would be, I mean, God, that would just crush the industry, right? That would be a massive.
They couldn't make them. It would be a no-brainer to buy one of those.
It already is, but that would be, So I think, I don't know. Like, I guess that would be a really interesting question, you know, if we ever got to ask Elon stuff about, you know, what is the strategy with this? It's probably all of the above, right? You probably will have a longer range one, but is the bigger goal to make it cheaper? Or is the bigger goal to make it, you know, better, faster charging? Or, like, what is the main reason to, you know, advance this other than the sake of just, like, constantly innovating?
I mean, you guys talked about last week the idea of the Chinese model, you know. and stuff like that. But I think that, you know, in order to not, you know, muddy up your luxury brand too much, like I know that Hyundai kind of had an identity crisis when they were selling a, you know, a $13,000 Accent and trying to sell what the time was the Hyundai Genesis.
Yep.
You know, which is like a $70,000, or maybe, I think they even had one above it. Something even more expensive that was, you know, a luxury, you know, it was competing with the Lexus, like the 400 series, like the L series Lexus, you know, and that's it can be a $100,000 car, and it had Hyundai on it.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't really, it's not a great idea. And for, by most, I guess, logic. But so they ended up making a Genesis brand.
Yep.
Just like in, we've seen this with every, at least in the U.S., because I guess U.S. consumers do care about that brand name so much. But Honda and Acura, you know, and you have Toyota and Lexus, you have Volkswagen and Audi, you have all, you know, all of these companies have had to make a sister company that is basically, you know, it's the same cars but rebranded. And I just, for that same exact reason, I can't imagine Tesla wanting to sell a car that's under $35,000, because if it does, it kind of sullies the image of the $140,000 Model S and Model X, you know, when decked out. It just takes that flagship thing down a little bit.
So from a branding perspective, I totally get where you're coming from, and I agree with you, but I would just, playing devil's advocate, Tesla already is in multiple pies, you know, with the solar and that kind of thing. So, I mean, I guess they could kind of reframe their brand as being not luxury, but just electric, you know, and the future and high tech and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I see where you're coming from though.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting, I totally agree. Basically, I think a lot of people felt that way with the Model 3, where if you were an S&X, buyer, you know, from years past, I mean, when I got my first Tesla, it was, you know, $50,000, which was crazy expensive to me. But a brand new one at the time was still $80,000, $90,000. Mm-hmm. And that was the cheapest one you could buy. That was like the cheapest Tesla you could buy. Was in the realm of like $80,000, maybe $75,000 or something like that. Because the Model 3 didn't exist yet. So even though mine was $50,000, driving around, I felt like, oh, yeah. I've got a, you know, $100,000 car here. So you know, that feeling that you get, whatever you want to call it, the
fizz,
the penchant, the lure, the whatever, the thing they have. And then the Model 3 comes out, and you're like, I think a lot of those people that had this used to this, like, oh, I've got the super expensive, the most advanced, blah, blah, blah. You're like, oh, now it's like $35,000. And like, I think there definitely was like a hit to that feeling. Just like you're saying, you know, a super cheap Model 3 or the Model 2 or whatever that other thing would be called, happened. And then the Roadster came out, and it was like, nope, we're back. We're good. Look at that thing. I think it's, yeah, but it is an interesting question. I don't know. Would they ever create a more, like, split the brands off, like create a more, a Honda to an Acura, you know, something like that?
Well, on that same line, like, where would the Cybertruck fit into that?
Yeah, ironically, it's the cheap one, right? Ironically, that's an extremely cheap vehicle for what it could do. Despite what Doug DeMiro, you know, says in his videos.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So my vote, here's the thing. I honestly don't expect anything from the Model Y release. I'm thinking it's just going to come out exactly as advertised, but that they would quickly iterate it. You know, get the first wave of sales out, and then within a year, we'd already see a major update to it, the 3, the S, and the X, all with these new Maxwell batteries or something.
So I do wonder, that's a good, I like that. I do wonder, though, because there's definitely like I don't know if you guys see it online or if I'm just like so deep in the weeds here on this, but there's definitely a sense of like Model 3 owners having like a superiority complex to Model S and X owners, as like, oh, we've got the latest and greatest. Like, your guys, that thing's old and dated, right? Like you see, right. You see a lot of comments and a lot of sentiment like that online. I wonder what Model Y is going to be like,
right?
Because if it comes out and it has, let's say, like, regardless, let's say it's the exact same range, like you said, the specs are as advertised, but it just happens to be a new something under the hood. I wonder if Model Y owners are going to be like, oh, you Model 3 owners with your, you know, with those horse and buggies you're driving around. How could you even? Like, I wonder if there's going to be that same sentiment in that regard.
Yeah, like if it has a little bit better graphics card for the, like, Netflix, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they'd be like, how could you possibly stand to put to point your eyes at that ugly screen? Ugh! Like, it's such
what a coincidence
joke.
That my car is the best one.
Right. You know,
yep,
I'm not saying
to happen.
I'm not saying I'm better. I'm just saying I'm different in a better way.
I'm not saying I'm better. I'm just saying you're worse.
Right. That, it's awesome. Going to be fun to watch. I think. I mean, Model Y is kind of the big story this year. If you look at like things that are we're expecting from Tesla, that's kind of the big one. You know, barring any other rumors or things. So it's fun to get excited about it.
And I don't remember where it was, but Elon. It was maybe the Cybertruck when he announced. He was just kind of like, you know, we're not. This is our last big announcement.
Yeah.
You know, as in product, he said. But there'll be a few. I think he might have said surprises next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still thinking that we're definitely going to see Maxwell batteries coming into play. And based on, I haven't had a time to finish the Third Row podcast yet, but shout out to them because how cool that we got 5 hours, or they're going to get 5 hours of basically uncut footage of Elon. I mean, that's awesome.
Is that how long time, how much time they spent?
Yeah, they got 5 hours with them.
Wow, yeah. Joe Rogan got one.
Yeah, no, Joe Rogan got two,
one,
didn't he?
One
or
and a half.
Still.
But
something.
That's
like,
incredible, yeah.
It's amazing, and it's amazing.
How does Elon
and I
have
can't
5 hours to spare?
It was
I don't
like
have five
weekend.
Hours to spare.
See, there's this thing, that Joe, that happens when you get to his level that you get to choose whatever the hell you want to do, you know? The exception of, like, going to court over a tweet. There are, like, things that, you know, yeah, I'm going to go watch the launch or I'm not. I get to say what I want to do, you know?
Yeah.
In fact, hey, guys, can you hold the launch until I get there? Thanks.
Which of my billion-dollar companies do I want to work on today?
Right, that's what you get to do.
Hey, International Space Station, can you not orbit for, like, two more orbits just so I can, like, just make it there to see the launch?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I like the idea of, I really like the idea of there being some small change or not small change, but I can't wait. I'm excited. I hope that we learn more at the... Oh, and I also, for the record, I do want to say I could actually see them really shocking us by starting to deliver in February. I know you don't think that.
I'll bet you 100 push-ups.
Do they have to be simultaneous or...
Like in one sitting, in a video, posted on Twitter.
Posted on Twitter even?
Mm-hmm. I've done it multiple times with people, yeah.
Is that how you get buff? You just like make a lot of bets for push-ups?
And he keeps losing?
Yeah.
He keeps losing.
Yeah.
Starliner's going up next month. Let's do it.
Either way, I win.
I
don't know. I don't know if I believe my own thing enough, but I bet in March that we'd have.
I'll take that.
You'll take March. And what are we defining as deliveries?
Customers, not employees.
Customers, not employees. Beginning to deliver in March.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, you heard push-ups. It here, folks. 100 push-up bet. Now, he may be crossing his fingers. We can't see him.
It's true.
So
that's true.
Has to be in March to a customer. That is not an employee. So, like, if Elon gets one, doesn't count. Okay?
Right.
Whatever. Okay. I'm guessing May. I mean, do we want to do it both ways? It's either March or not, or is it March or May? So then if April, we both have to do push-ups.
No. March or not.
Okay. I'll take that bet.
March or sooner, because if it happens before, then I definitely, then you have to do 200.
Fine.
So there you go.
Fine. All right. I'm in. So one thing about Elon's thing there and getting to do what he wants also is that the whole stock thing, getting back to that, you know, what we started with here, if you guys recall, there was like this really wild bonus structure that they had set up for him. So now that the stock is let's check in again, 571, almost 572 now, according to the New York Times, if the market capitalization remains above 100 billion, which, by the way, makes them the most valuable U.S. automaker, which is really cool. I still think they're like light years behind Volkswagen and Toyota globally. But point being, how cool is that?
A quarter of Toyota, but that's nothing. Or half of Toyota, because Toyota was $200 billion.
Yeah.
So that's nothing to shake a stick at.
Right. No, that's incredible. If the market cap remains above $100 billion on average over a six-month period, including at least 30 consecutive days, Mr. Musk will have the option to buy 1.69 million shares at $350 each. So why would you do that? So these are known as stock options. You would basically, you know, that payout, if they remain up there, will be worth $370 million before taxes. So that would be, $370 million minus taxes, so, $100 million maybe left.
It doesn't actually seem like that much when...
Well,
that doesn't seem like that much.
When your current current net worth is estimated to be $32 billion, yeah.
Right.
But you know what's funny about that? It's like $32 billion on paper, right?
Yeah. Clearly, well, everything's on paper.
Yeah. Like, clearly, you know, he doesn't have to worry about money. His kids, no one will ever have to worry about money that are in his orbit. it will, you know, yeah. Like, he couldn't just go out and say, you know what, forget it. I'm selling 100% of my Tesla shares. Like, he legally can't do that, right? Mm-hmm. It's nothing to shake. I mean, I would take $370 million before taxes. I would do that. You know,
oh, before taxes? Well.
Yeah. Let me relocate to the Cayman Islands or Switzerland or something.
For those of you just listening and couldn't see Joe's face during that, Joe's been making some great faces today, and I'm very happy about it.
I'm scratching my lip.
Joe, why don't you just make faces all the time?
Because why don't we just do it? Why don't we just? Transition. Okay, so here's what I did today. So I put out a thing this morning asking, or was it last night? Anyway, asking for some why don't they justices. And here's what I decided to do. Because seriously, and to everybody who on Twitter, I didn't even actually tag you guys. So these were all just my people. So whoops. But I got a lot of fantastic questions and I couldn't pick any of them, or I couldn't pick which one I wanted. So I basically was like, all right, whichever one got the most likes, I'm going to pick that one. So that was a criteria. I left it up to fate. Actually, I left it up to Twitter. And it's a supernatural force. And this is what kind of settled. Where did it go? Hang on. Let me find it. Here we go. It's kind of random, but let's go for it. Why not? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See.
Yeah.
So, why don't they just implement the 4-day work week? This is from Gift Horse Dentist, and he asks if he's doing it right. I guess he's doing it all right. And we did have an interesting response here from Austin Falls, who says that his squadron just got introduced to that last week, so it's been nice. So, go Navy. We'll see how it goes. So, the Navy only works 4 days a week, guys, apparently.
Well, this one particular US squadron. Navy.
So then why can't we save money on defense spending? That doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I'll take this one because this is very in no way. You guys both would have a lot more knowledge on this.
But to be clear, Gift Horse Dentist here that asked it has a German flag in his
He does.
Thing. So in theory, I guess that maybe he's alluding. He also has a U.S. one, so maybe that's alluding to.
Yeah.
He's from Germany or Europe or whatever. So there might be some, so that question might make a bit more, make more sense in that context.
So just for reference, I believe, is it Finland that has a 4-day work week now? So for me, this is something I would like to see is that, as like automation and efficiencies, because it used to take forever to be able to, do certain things that now take us that are literally instantaneous. And really, the average human, the average laborer, the average person isn't really reaping the benefits. We're just having to do more. I would love to see that come around to benefit the average person. That, like, hey, maybe we're working too much. Maybe humans aren't meant to sit for 40 hours in a cubicle or, all these things. And
I don't know how the economy actually handles that. I think you start getting into scary words like socialism and things like that that people
we should define what he means by 4-day work week maybe before you go on.
Yeah, I believe 4-day work week would be a reduction from the standard 5-day work week, which is usually 8 hours of work per day.
So when he's referring to the Navy and stuff, what they're talking about is 4 10-hour days.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. So you work a longer day. That's typically what that means, is you work a longer day, but you work less of them. So it gives you an extra day to, you know, be with your family, run errands.
Well, I'm glad you defined that, because I was thinking, I've seen some things talking about reducing the average work time down to like 30, basically.
That may be a thing too, but I don't know. What I got out of that, typically when you talk about work, four tens is what you would say. Mm-hmm. And like in lots of different fields, this is super common. Like firefighters have a really interesting one where they work like 72 hours straight, and then they take like 4 days off. So they work like overnight. You know, right. They sleep at the station, they cook, they, you know, things like that. And then nurses and doctors, and then pilots. Like
people,
there's lots of
call.
People. Right. Well, or just like really kind of odd, different. Yeah, there's all kinds of different things. But usually what you'd say is I work 4 tens. And that means I work 10-hour days, and I have the 5th day off. And I know everyone that I know that's ever done that really likes it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because really, at the end of the day, if you're working 8 hours, the drive there, the drive back,
there's like overhead,
the getting ready and all that, you're basically working 10 hours anyway.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder what it would do as far as traffic even. You know, you'd have basically potentially a 20% reduction in traffic if people aren't having to drive to work 5 days a week as opposed to four. I mean, I would love to see that become a more standardized thing. And also having work days, not just 9 to 5, but, you know, have some shifts come in at 7, some shifts come in at 8, not, you know, stagger it more. So again, the roads and infrastructure is not slammed during these standardized hours. I think there'd be some efficiencies there. So, yeah.
I agree with that. I think it's an interesting question. I mean, maybe coming from, like, I don't know in Europe how these things are regulated, but I'll tell you one interesting bit. I worked for a company called Thomson Learning, which you probably know Thomson Reuters. Mm-hmm. Thomson is the parent company, and they have lots of different, like, you know, branches of what they do and stuff. And they were a Canadian company. And so Friday's official policy, at noon, you're done. Day over. You're gone. You can hang out and work. You can do whatever you want. So we would always, like, play ping pong and, like, go out to lunch, and we'd all bail. So they had a 35-hour – so they actually had a reduced amount of hours that we worked. Now, you know, being an hourly contractor for them, you know, I didn't – like, that didn't mean anything to me because I still needed to work 40 hours to get paid. But – it is. I love the idea of different modes of scheduling things to reap a lot of those benefits, as you mentioned, Tim. Also, I think that just employees in general can benefit from this. Some people work better in the morning. Some people really drag in the mornings. Mm-hmm. You know. So I think that, like, yeah, having more flexible schedules and things in general is a good idea. Obviously, for some things that doesn't work, like the coffee lady out here decides when she wants to come in and set up her coffee shop or her coffee cart, which if I get in here at a certain time, either coffee's there or it's not. So, you know, like things like that. They're, like, sometimes some jobs, or imagine the Tesla factory, right? They've got like three full-time shifts. So that thing is humming 24/7, 24 hours a day. There's people coming and going, the machine's making the things. So different industries, different things. Yeah. I think it's going to be hard to say, like, blanketly, like, do that. But, you know, in Europe, there's also, they get like, what, 3 months off or something like that as well in the summer. That's why you go to Europe in the summer and it's like, oh my God, it's like crazy. Everyone's not working. They're just out and about because literally the whole country's off work. So
they're
there's
on
things
holiday.
Like that. Whatever. Yeah. But point being, I don't know. I'm a fan of this. I don't think it's something in the U.S. that you can, like, just implement, though. You know, unless there's some kind of labor law now that says you have to do 5 days a week or something, which I don't believe there is. So
I mean, for me, it's kind of like, who is the they in this question? I mean, if it's just an employer, every job is unique and has their own, you know, needs and whatnot. So it all depends on that. But I mean, yeah, kind of going from where you were just saying, like, if it was government policy, like a minimum wage or something like that, that you can only work 4 days a week or something. I mean, I don't see that happening in the United States. Just because government mandating anything, people flip out over it.
So
And I should definitely point out, comrade, in our Discord, we have a lot of European listeners and stuff, and they're probably just like screaming because according to comrade, EU, so European Union law mandates 4 weeks of paid vacation.
Yeah, so they get a month off. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to see some of these efficiencies of the modern era be utilized and trickled down to the average person and the average family.
You know,
I mean, that makes a huge difference for health and mental health and family time and all that stuff. I think that would just be a total win for everyone.
Yeah, the only argument against something like this, like the government implementing something like this, that I have is that it can't be applied unilaterally. Like, it needs to be there need to be more criteria, right? So, for example, if in the U.S. we have something called the WARN Act, which if you want to, let's say, close down a call center with 1,000 people working there, you can't just literally have people show up one day and be like, hey, bye, you guys are fired. It's illegal. You know, they would all sue you. Your business would, whatever. So the WARN Act says you have to give them like 90 days notice. You have to provide severance pay. You have to blah, 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 blah. There's all these like labor laws that have been established for decades now that have been developed here in the U.S., but the problem or the challenge is, imagine Tim, you know, and Joe, and I'm in this boat too. You know, you work with contractors, right, to help with editing, maybe some research, whatever it is, right? Maybe different things people will help film from time to time, whatever it is. Well, in fact, there's even a law right now going through in California called AB5, which was totally meant to force Uber and companies like Uber to pay their people, give them benefits, to make them act like employees instead of contractors, where you don't have to give them, you know, crap. You just whatever. You work when you want to work. It's your thing. But really, in reality, it doesn't work that way. That, because there's not all these like conditions around who qualifies for that, that's like a unilateral thing. Like, I may be forced to anybody that I work with to hire them as an employee, pay employment taxes, provide benefits, et cetera, when I, as a business, being very small, cannot afford that. Mm-hmm. So I think that because the economy is so large and there's so many different like layers to it, it whatever kind of thing like this, if anything ever like this did get proposed, it would have to be very thoughtfully crafted in a way that doesn't like hurt startups or hurt freelancers, you know, in that regard. That whole thing with freelancers, like if you're a software developer that is a freelance, you know, guy doing some stuff for a company, they may have to pay you as an employee now, which could totally ruin like how they do business and how you do business. Like, so I think that people just need to be very careful about how anything like
broad
this
strokes.
Exactly, because the US is so massive. This is where, like, yeah, you look at maybe smaller countries. And I know the EU collectively has some big policies like that. But, like, you know, there's a lot of other smaller countries that have these policies that work really well. But in a place, you know, 10 times as large with a even larger, broader, diverse set of people and companies, it's very rare that I think you can find a common denominator that will like, oh, yeah, that should work for everybody kind of a thing. So that would be my only worry about anything like that, is that it would like actually hurt some businesses in some ways and then help others. Like, ironically, that thing meant to force Uber to treat these people like employees, they are getting an exclusion, or they're petitioning for one. So like my guitar teacher who runs a small music studio and pays his teachers as 1099 may have to hire them as employees now, and he may just have to close his business because he couldn't afford to do it. So, you know, there's really like unintended consequences anytime something like that happens, you know, so... Mm-hmm. Lots to think about. You can't just say yes, do that. That makes sense. Like, there's always a, but what about this? You know.
So this one's not a why don't they just? It's but what about this?
It's a just let employers figure it out on what's right for them and their people. And maybe if you want employers to do that, this is my opinion. If you want employers to start doing this, because maybe there's some studies about, you know, mental health or whatever. Give them some incentive to do so. Don't make it a law, because that's where it gets really difficult. And I guess maybe that's me as more of a fan of capitalism and a free market, you know, in that regard. Like, I believe incentives are great to get people to do good things. But when you force people to do things is where there's always some harm in that. You know, it's never just purely, you know, even like the minimum wage thing, federal minimum wage is kind of like a, it sounds like obvious, But then, you know, that will become the $7 an hour in a short period of time anyways. It's like the induced demand kind of a thing. So I don't know. That's my view on it. I think you should do something like this with incentives, not make it a law.
Yeah.
I hate it when something seems so cut and dried and then you start looking into it and it's like, damn it, this is really hard. Like, this is really complicated. Because there are, like you said, I mean, I don't know that I agree with everything you're saying right there, but there are definitely, while I am in favor of regulations, there's a lot of unintended consequences that can come from those that can harm people sometimes more often than not. But yeah.
Like, hey, you can't discriminate against people based on like race or gender. Okay, fine. I think that's like a pretty fair one that you can say that's a law, right? Mm-hmm. But then when you get more into the minutia of like how you operate your business, which is what like a law and the days work days would be.
Yeah.
That's where I feel like it's just too, I don't know. Yeah. Well, maybe in a small area it works, but in a broad yeah. area, it's just too much.
Well, that's why I was saying, like, I mean, every employee or every business has different needs and whatnot. Like the last job that I had for 12 years was a newspaper. Well, that newspaper went out every day. Uh-huh. You know, so regardless of how many people were working and how many days of the week, you know, that could be a problem. So
right, yeah, good question though. Yep. Like the discussion.
Yeah.
Well, what are you guys working on?
I always start this one. I guess I'll just take it. yes. So y'all might find this one interesting. I'm talking about algae biofuels.
Ooh.
On Monday.
Oh yeah.
Algae yeah. based, not the fryer engine or the old fryer from McDonald's biofuels. No.
But I do talk about how back when I had my diesel car, one of the reasons I bought it was because I wanted to be able to do that. I wanted
biodiesel. Yeah.
Well, and also when I got it was like it was the mid 2000s and the oil price was through the roof and so I got this diesel car that got like 60 miles a gallon and everybody was like, oh yeah, you can just go collect, you know. Go collect oil from restaurants and make your own diesel. And I was like, yeah, I'll totally do that. And then we bought a house and I was like, I'm going to set up my own little refinery in the backyard. None of that happened. But, but anyway, no, it's interesting and it's taken me a lot longer to write than I would have liked. I actually still haven't recorded it yet. So I might do it after this or I might do it tomorrow morning, but
yeah. Sweet.
Tim, Ben. I've got a bunch of stuff lined up. I've got on Tuesday a video about why I think maybe you mentioned this before. I've had it done for a while, finally getting it out there. Is why towing is a completely pointless way to measure a truck's worth. And there's a lot of talk about this and all that. Yeah. And so basically, looking at Cybertruck is what I'm talking about. How people want to compare Cybertruck based on its towing ability to other trucks, and that's just dumb. And I've got data to prove it. So that's what that video is about. I don't know if people love it or hate it, but it's just something I'm like, this is so stupid. And I have, and it's not just me saying the opinion side of it. It's like, look, I have data that shows this is stupid. So there's that. And then the Tesla earnings call is next week as well. So that'll be a big one. And then, yeah, other things, you know. Are you covering stuff. Starlink?
So I won't be doing a live stream for Starlink. Hold on, it's getting. So I won't be doing an actual live stream for Starlink, but I will be shooting it. Like I said, I'm excited to play around with that scope again and try doing stuff like that. But I have to get my pollution video research totally done because I will be doing that speech in a week, basically a week and a half, at fully charged live. So that's putting some incentive to really. Had to finish that up, and that's something I've wanted to do for a long time, but I've just had so many things going on. So I'm actually like, that's one of the reasons I'm going to be staying down here in Florida just to finish that up. So yeah, I probably won't have a scripted video still coming out until like middle of February at this point, but just kind of lots of little things here and there popping up, and hopefully it's going to be this whole beginning of the year. I have so many things I'm trying to tackle and trying to take care of and looking at a mobile studio setup because I really want to provide better coverage for some of the big events coming this year, like DM1 and Mars 2020 rover and, you know, all Starship and stuff like that. I'm really wanting to get like a mobile studio going.
Just like buy an old news van, you know? Like they had to figure it out.
I want to be something way cooler. I'm not going to do something turkey like that. I want it to be awesome. So that's what I'm working on too. So a lot more behind the scenes things for me on my end. A lot of just like time suckers, but all in preparation so that once everything's all settled and all that stuff, I'm going to be cranking out some good content, and it'll be a year of transitioning and working on some cooler things for me. So I'm really excited about it, and I think it'll make a big difference in the long run, but the videos are going to be a little slow, so sorry. Oh, although I will be releasing, hopefully in the next week and a half, or maybe by the time we do Fully Charged, I should have my video done about making the telescope trackers and all that stuff. So hopefully that turns out to be a really cool video, and it'll be something different. It'll be a little more behind the scenes style, and kind of the, like, what would it take to make a NASA style telescope? You know,
could you imagine someone, you know, because this is, I'm sure you guys did it, you know, how I did it. Like, how do you know what camera to buy? How do you know what light? Like, how do you know all that stuff, right? You go to YouTube, obviously, mm-hmm. and you go look mm-hmm. at the people that you admire, their content, and see what they do. And then you realize, yeah no way I'm going to spend $50,000 on a camera body. But how funny would that be if it's like, you know, Tim's guide on like how to do this. And then like 5 years from now, some kid's watching it going, I want to do a space channel. Let me go see that. You know, and then like they do it. How awesome would that right. be, man? That would be so rad.
Well, I imagine what if it begins where we have like a total turnkey solution for telescope tracking stuff like this, which basically my friend Scott Ferguson from Astronomy Live, who started doing this first, and has kind of hooked us up with some stuff, but we're trying to make it even more turnkey. Imagine if like Rocket Lab or some other rocket companies end up, popping in and buying like our solutions and stuff, because it's coming up with just as good results as anything else. Like, that'd just be hilarious.
You just like have like a washing machine size thing you wheel out there, right? And then like plug it in to power and you're done. Like, I just, you know, control it from a tablet and that's it. You know, it tracks, it does its all. Yeah, that'd be so cool.
Exactly. Yep. Cool. Well, we'll see if it turns out, and if people like it. They might not, but I'll give it a try.
Go for it.
And we'll see you in our ludicrous future.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do and you want to kind of help get it out there, you can give us a nice review on any of your podcast streaming platforms, whichever one you use. That kind of helps get it out there. Also, we do have a Patreon set up, so you can join us there at patreon.com/ourludicrousfuture. You can get your name in the credits, meet a whole other group of like-minded people. It's a lot of fun. We do appreciate it. We'll see you there.